For 6 years, we've been busting ass trying to get respect. Guess what? We done with that.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Glorious Wrestling Podcast. It wasn't the most eventful week in wrestling, but that's a story in itself. We're a few days away from the Backlash pay-per-view, the first SmackDown exclusive pay-per-view, and today we'll go over the full card and give our full predictions and analysis. Then we'll be going into the PWI Top 500 came out this week. Roman Reigns was number one of that, and we're going to give our own wrestling awards for 2016 this week. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be a big thing. My name's Nick Negropontis, and as always, I am joined by the Adam Pacitti to my Adam Blompier. Dem, are you ready?
Nick, I'm ready to show all the other podcasts that they are S-A-W-F-T. Soft.
We didn't plan that, by the way. That was just, like, mental connectivity. Anyway, let's get into the most important thing that happened this week. And that was the Usos turning heel, probably for the first time ever. I don't know if they've ever been heels before.
Can't remember.
No, I don't think anyone can. The Usos have been stale for quite a long time. We know how good they are in the ring. We've seen them have match of the year candidates in the past. And now they're going to turn heel. And who knows where this will lead from here. What did you make of it when you saw it?
I loved it. It suits them. They're naturally charismatic guys. And I know it hasn't been able to be shown on WWE television. We see it on Up, Up, Down, Down. Just when they're talking on Talking Smack as well, we've been able to see glimpses of it. They're suited to that role really well, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. I think the whole idea of turning them heel because the fans turned on them when they were paired with Roman, I think that's really smart too. Like, they're not forgetting what happened 2 months ago, which has been the WWE style to just pretend things that happened a week ago never happened.
Yep.
I honestly thought it was the best segment of the week. I was going into, I watched SmackDown on delay. I remember thinking about sending out a tweet going, oh, SmackDown's been great. Now we're getting to Usos and Alpha. This is going to be a 15-minute fantastic match that's going to blow the Raw tag division out of the water. And then it ended, like 20 seconds in. And I felt disappointed to the point where I was so annoyed I didn't see the heel turn coming. So when it happened, like, it genuinely got me. It genuinely shocked me. And then them taking out Gable and taking American Alpha out of Backlash, I think that was... That's just fantastic booking all around.
It is, and it's surprising to see just how quickly you've seen the booking change and the way they're approaching things. Like, that's a move no one saw coming. Not only the heel turn, but taking American Alpha out of Backlash, as you said, that's genius booking. That's like, how much heat does that get on the Usos first? And how good does it get the feud going for inevitably when the Usos will probably win the titles?
Yeah,
I think.
Agreed.
And when Alpha come back, that feud's going to be amazing.
Well, it's the feud that's going to carry the tag team division. It was always, when you saw the SmackDown tag team division, you saw, okay, Usos and Alpha. They're the top two teams.
It had to be, as predicted.
Yeah. If you want to take some credit for that now, go for it. They're obviously going to beat the Hype Bros, or the Hype Brothers, as Daniel Bryan calls them.
I called them that last week, and you lambasted me.
And Bryan covered you. I was wondering where I'd heard that before. I thought Bryan had just done it before, but it was you. Slater and Rhino, the Slater journey is nowhere near completed yet. We'll get more into the Backlash card later on, so we won't go too deep into that. But I think it's just a fantastic move to turn the Usos heel. And speaking of turns, there was another one this week. It was Seth Rollins who has flipped on a dime and has come out. I wouldn't blame Seth. He's still acting as if he's Seth Rollins, unchanged. But they're positioning him as a babyface now, and it's clear as day.
It is, and we were discussing last week how we didn't want it to happen immediately. And he's been booked as a babyface straight away. But that thing I was saying last week about him man on a mission, that's the way to describe his turn. And that's exactly how he came out. You know, he came straight down to the ring in the first segment with Kevin Owens and Foley and Steph McMahon. Just seeing that sort of fire in him, seeing that. And then he sort of, when he was against Jericho, he kind of, you know, put his hands up for the crowd, looking around the crowd. And, I mean, we all want to see Seth Rollins be babyface, and I think they've done it a bit too quickly where they flipped it straight away, but, I mean, it's still really cool to see.
They didn't really have a choice, to be honest. With Balor going out, they need a top face, and obviously Owens doesn't have a logical opponent for Clash of Champions because we sent out a tweet, and you can follow us at GloriousWP, by the way, asking people who they thought Owens' first opponent would be, and most people responded with Seth Rollins. There's a couple of votes for Sami Zayn, but there was really nobody else. Obviously, no one touched Roman and nobody touched Jericho, who were the other options. So Seth didn't have a logical opponent. Owens didn't have a logical opponent. So they sort of have to throw them together. And that sort of made the face turn need to happen a lot quicker. And honestly, I'm okay with it. And I think the one thing people forget is just how good Seth Rollins is. When you wrestle as a heel for so long, people sometimes forget Because, like,
It limits you.
It does limit you. You have to, like, you're the one applying the headlocks. You're the one, you know, doing the slowing down of the pace rather than the one who's, like, speeding up and doing the comeback stuff. Seth is a fantastic flyer. And now we'll get to see that. And I think we showed it because his match with Jericho was fantastic.
Yep.
I honestly think that's probably Jericho's best match since he's been back with the WWE.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Jericho's in-ring ability and that being his best match. But I think Rollins really, you know, put it up to another level. Him being a face now, his matches automatically somehow even more, they increase to a higher level and he brings other people with him. So Jericho's the perfect guy for that first match to be Rollins face versus Jericho heel. It was a great match and, yeah, kudos to him.
Agreed. Okay, I think we both agree Clash of Champions will be Seth, Kevin Owens. Roman won't be added to the match. They'll probably end up with Roman Jericho.
Yep, which isn't a bad thing.
No, that's fine. Rusev's on his honeymoon, so that's just fair enough. That's some time taken up there. But I think we both agree Kevin Owens retains, Triple H gets involved.
I think Kevin Owens retains. I'm not sure if Triple H necessarily has to get involved straight away, like in the match again, screw Seth Rollins out of it again. I'm not sure about that, but Kevin Owens will win, yeah. And it will be used to set up Triple H versus Seth Rollins.
I can't see them having Seth lose clean, though. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to get into the full Backlash card. Obviously, Backlash is Monday, 10 a.m. for our Australian fans. Unfortunately,
Melbourne time.
Unfortunately, neither of us can watch it live, but we will be live tweeting from Glorious WP on Twitter if you want to follow us. So let's get into the card. We haven't planned this at all, so I have no idea what he's going to predict for this. So let's start with the tag team tournament semi-final match between the Usos and the Hype Bros.
The Usos, no need to explain it.
Agreed. Easy as that. Okay, so let's go to the finals. Usos versus One Man Gore.
Yep, that's...
I just caught you off guard with that naming.
If you made that up, that's genuinely horrible.
I didn't actually. I got that off a Facebook page.
Okay, well, that's horrible from that Facebook page. The Usos will win, and as we've discussed previously, I think Rhino will turn on Heath Slater, and even though Heath Slater is still a free agent, somehow will keep appearing on SmackDown for a feud with Rhino.
Agreed. So the next match on the card is The Miz versus Dolph Ziggler for the Intercontinental Championship. I honestly think that The Miz retains, Maurice gets involved. That'll probably be the coward angle taken with Miz retaining.
Yep, I think The Miz has to win. They haven't really built much of a storyline. They haven't had enough time to, so this feud can keep going and it will start with The Miz winning.
I'm really annoyed that we keep agreeing with each other, so let's try and vary that up with Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt.
I think Randy Orton will win this first match between the two. I think it will be, again, the start of the feud where hopefully Bray Wyatt really catapults himself to that level where he will challenge for the championship sooner rather than later, but Randy Orton will get up first up.
Good, I disagree, because honestly, I've just realized that I've tipped all heels to win at Backlash, which just shows the kind of person I am. But anyway, I've got Bray winning simply because I honestly think this feud needs to start with Randy on a losing streak, simply because that's the kind of thing that Bray taps into well. And I trust SmackDown's booking at this point, so I think they'll do the right thing and give Bray the win. There's been rumors that Luke Harper might return. I don't know about that. I would obviously rather keep him away from Bray and have him team with Rowan. But I think Bray's going to win this one.
Yeah, that's fair enough. The next match is the six-pack elimination women's challenge. Natalia versus Bliss versus Bella, Carmella, Naomi, and Becky Lynch. Who have you got?
I've got Natalia winning. And I've got her winning simply because I think that's the best way to get the title onto Becky eventually. The whole thing behind this SmackDown Women's Division, and sorry if I rant here because I love women's wrestling a lot more than I love most other things. Natalia needs to win simply because Becky Lynch is the person who you have to build this entire division around. And the way you get the title onto Becky has to be the big huzzah moment for this division. So I feel like you put the title on Natalia now, have Becky do most of the eliminations, have Natty storm in at the end and roll Becky up and win the title, have her steal it, and then have that feud go on from there. I wouldn't have Nikki win. I feel like you should be able to continue her and Carmella as their storyline without the title. I mean, Carmella has beat her this week on SmackDown, has beaten her up the last 2 weeks. Nikki just eliminating her in the match wouldn't feel right. And they can't be the final two because no one will believe Carmella can win the match. So that storyline should be able to continue without the title. So I feel like Natalia wins, Becky comes second.
I don't know if they can go back to Natalia Becky Lynch, because we saw a feud between them recently. I just don't think that that's something that they should be doing. I'm going to go with Nikki Bella. I know you just said, but they need someone that has pedigree in that they were champion for a long time. Obviously, she's got the record for the longest reigning, I think. Yes?
Yes, correct.
Yep, so I think they have to give it to her, but I think she dropped the title pretty quickly to allow Carmella and Nikki Bella to keep going. But the first champion, I think it has to be Nikki Bella.
I think whoever wins the title has to have at least a decent run. I wouldn't want to have Nikki just win it and then drop it. I feel like that would make the title look kind of average, unless the title goes from Nikki to Becky Lynch. Whoever, I don't think Becky can win this match. I feel like she has to win it in a singles match. But putting the title on Nikki right now sort of doesn't lead anywhere. Because then what does that give us? A Nikki Bella versus Natalya feud or Nikki Bella versus Alexa Bliss feud? As much as we both love Bliss, that's not really an appealing match. I think Natty and Becky are the only two who can really carry the division to start with, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I just think that the name, Nikki Bella, just to catapult it straight up, I think that...
Yep, and that's
my reasoning.
And that's something that WWE will probably do and probably consider. Now, so obviously,
I'd be right then.
We'll see. We will see. Now time for the main event. Obviously, AJ Styles versus Dean Ambrose. I think we're both going to agree here again, unfortunately.
The phenomenal one, AJ Styles.
Agreed. AJ Styles is going to win. Ambrose will put up a good fight. It'll be a good match, hopefully. And AJ Styles is going to be the WWE champion.
It wouldn't necessarily surprise to see them go with Ambrose, though, because they have pulled some swerves recently. I just think AJ needs to win. He's on such a good run.
Yeah.
His promo work's outstanding, and him and Ambrose can have a good feud on the mic as well as in the ring. So
AJ will never have this much momentum ever again if he loses to Dean Ambrose. The only way that it could possibly stay is if you have a double countout. That would be a really dull way to end the pay-per-view. I think if you have Styles win, that's even better, because then you can have The Miz claiming that he's the only person who retained his title at Backlash.
Even more ammunition for him.
Exactly. And I think you have to put the title on Styles now, and then he holds it until WrestleMania, to be honest.
Yep.
Okay, so that's it for our opening segment. We're going to get into our awards for 2016 in a little bit. Just want to let you guys know that later in the week, we're going to do a full roster analysis for the women's division. Raw and SmackDown, every single person on the roster, where they are now, where they were 12 months ago, and where they will be at WrestleMania. So stay tuned for that. Probably later in the week, hopefully before Raw and SmackDown come out, we'll get that one up online. You can follow us on Twitter at GloriousWP. You can follow me at Twitter at Nick Negropontis.
And me at DemP_9.
Yep, and that brings us to our awards for 2016. We've decided to do this instead of Book City this week. We'll give that a rest for a week. That'll be back next week. So our thoughts are here. This is just based on 2016. And I think the best place to start, the best award to start with, just to give you a general idea of what we're going to do here, is the best pay-per-view of 2016. Dem, we found this one pretty hard, didn't we?
Yeah, we had to go through a few of them. WWE hasn't put forward too many good pay-per-views this year, unfortunately. Yeah. You know, there's been good patches in pay-per-views and memorable moments. I have gone with NXT TakeOver Dallas.
Fair enough.
Just before WrestleMania, obviously. The amount of new champions and memorable matches on the card, I just thought that was the best one.
Well, Nakamura Zane speaks for itself. I've gone with the Royal Rumble simply just because it was so bad. It's been so bad the last 3 years, and they delivered a fantastic Royal Rumble match. Owens and Ambrose, like, it was just a fantastic card. And honestly, I thought it was the best all-round pay-per-view of the year.
Yep.
So our next award, we're going to go into another big one, Match of the Year, Dem.
Okay, well, following on from NXT TakeOver Dallas, I can't go past Nakamura versus Zayn. That was just an unbelievable match. That was just so memorable. It was the first time they hadn't really gone through anything, and I thought that was just so good. You?
Oh, I'm going to go with AJ and Cena from SummerSlam.
That was my second one.
Yeah, they're the clear top two. I think I was going to go with Zayn Nakamura, but I felt simply the implications of AJ beating John Cena at SummerSlam clean in the middle of the ring, where Zayn Nakamura was more of a exhibition match. I just think the implications of Cena, AJ puts that above. The next one on our list, most underrated wrestler on the roster. I'm going to go with Paige, simply because she hasn't been used at all this year. She had the final women's championship match of 2015 at TLC, and then has had absolutely nothing this year, and I guess that's probably partially why she's probably not going to return to the WWE.
I had to toss up between a few here. I ended up going with the person that's won the last two, I think, on Meltzer's awards, Cesaro.
Fair enough.
You know, he got close to the Intercontinental Championship. You know, he was up there in the feuds, and then he's sort of just dropped off recently, even though Sheamus Cesaro's been a good feud.
Yeah.
I just think Cesaro's been underutilized, underrated, and hopefully in the near future, he shifts across to SmackDown and has some success.
Agreed. Okay, best heel.
I went with Charlotte.
Interesting.
I can't go past Charlotte. I think The Miz was probably the other one, but Charlotte has been just a great heel. The crowds love to hate her every single time. She's portrayed a heel really well, and it's helped boost the faces that she's gone against.
Yep.
Whether it's, I guess, Nikki Bella was a face for a bit there, and then there's Sasha Banks and all those sorts of things. I just think that she's been the most consistent performer.
I didn't expect that answer, but that's totally fair enough. I'm going with The Miz simply because there's no one who can match him for a pure heel. Most overrated wrestler? I'm going for a bit of a controversial one here. I'm going Brock Lesnar. I don't think he's delivered a single good match this year. That triple threat match at Fastlane was good. I don't think he gets much credit for that, though, to be honest, if you go back and watch it. I don't think he's delivered a good match this year. I think he's been overhyped, and I don't think he cares enough anymore to deliver good matches.
I really like that call. I consider it too. I like that you've gone with it. This is sort of going just a bit before 2016 as well, but obviously in the last calendar year, I've gone with Sheamus. He was given the championship not that long ago. And, you know, he went to the League of Nations. But the fact that he was classified as championship material, even if it was just to get the title onto Reigns eventually, I just think that he's been, even though recently, you have to give him credit, him and Cesaro have been great, as I said before, but I think he's been the most overrated performer.
Fair enough. It was a hard award to give, to be honest, most overrated. I think most people are where they should be outside of, you know, someone like Cesaro. Best babyface.
This was a hard one for me. It was really hard, and I didn't know who to choose. I went with Shinsuke Nakamura.
Really?
Yes. I just think that, and he's not playing a character, and that's the thing I like.
Yeah.
That I like the most. He hasn't really got a gimmick. He's just he's completely over. And he loves performing in front of a crowd. He loves being that guy to just annoy the heels. And I think that's the best side of a babyface. So I've gone with Nakamura.
Honestly, that was a hard one as well. I don't think that outside of Ambrose, I don't think there's really been a top face all year. I've gone with Bayley simply because if you look at NXT, you look at guys like Balor and Neville and these guys who have gone up to the main roster. The last few months before they go up, the crowds drop off them. Balor got less reactions. Neville gets less reactions. Bayley did not. Up until the moment she left, she was getting the biggest pops of the night, and that's just because she's Bayley. And her first 3 weeks on Raw, she's gotten massive ovations. I think Bayley is the best pure babyface, and The Miz is the best pure heel. The next one, biggest surprise of 2016, Dem.
Fancy it being last week, only last week. I've gone with Triple H turning on Rollins and being part of Kevin Owens getting the title. Not so much Kevin Owens getting the title, but the way it was done. The way that Triple H came in, even though you could have probably picked it when Triple H was in the ring with Rollins and Kevin Owens at the same time, you probably had an inkling he was going to do it. Yep. But still, at the start of Raw, no way you thought that was going to happen. So credit where the credit's due to the WWE, I thought that was the biggest surprise.
I've gone with a non-kayfabe one, the success of AJ Styles in the WWE. To me, that I did not see him being the guaranteed WWE champion a week from now. When he came in, I thought he'd be an upper mid-carder. I thought he'd be a great Intercontinental champion. I mean, we know how good he is, but I just didn't see the WWE pushing him all the way there. We saw them strike him down at WrestleMania. Then he went into that amazing feud with Reigns, and now here he is. Like, he's probably one of the most over people on the roster, if not the most over.
My biggest surprise isn't changed to you saying that was your biggest surprise. I thought he was going to be a star straight away. It's AJ freaking Styles.
But would the WWE allow him to be the star? That's what surprised me.
Okay.
Biggest disappointment of the year. My biggest disappointment of the year, following on from AJ Styles actually, is actually Gallows and Anderson. And I won't go much into them because I know you want to talk about them later, but Gallows and Anderson, for me, they just haven't lived up to the hype and haven't been given the chance to live up to the hype.
Don't like that call. I've gone with Del Rio. He came in as the United States champion. You know, he looked like he was going to come in. He was, you know, and even some of the crowd do chant see like there, but he's come in looking to be a main event player, and then he's just completely dropped off.
Honestly, I can't say he disappointed me because I never expected anything from him to begin with. Feud of the year?
Feud of the year, there are a couple. I've ended up going with AJ Styles, John Cena.
Yeah, agreed.
Just that's the match everyone wanted to see. That's the feud everyone wanted to see. And the fact Styles went over in the end, there were little bits, like little low moments within the feud. But I thought overall, the performance of both those guys, just they're classy, they're professionals, they're the best. They're the two best wrestlers probably of the generation that we're currently in. So I thought that was the best one.
There hasn't really been another feud that challenges them, to be honest. Like, there hasn't been a Triple H, Daniel Bryan, or a Ambrose, Rollins.
Yeah, I thought go with them. Bella Joe could have been, maybe.
Yeah, but the match is disappointed, to be honest. Yeah. One that I haven't actually given you any notice on because I just thought of it, best championship reign. So I'll go with mine first. I think there's only really been two good championship reigns this year in terms of just ones that have stood out above the rest. I've gone with The Revival as the NXT Tag Team Champions. They've had fantastic matches. They've stolen the show at almost every takeover. Most NXT events they're on, they put on good matches. And their match with Gargano and Ciampa was just amazing. So I'm going with them, the two-time NXT champs.
Yeah, I really like that one too. I'd maybe say Ambrose as the world champion just because no one expected it. And then he's just been cocky. He's been a really sort of in-your-face sort of guy as the champion. I reckon he's suited to being champion perfectly, which is against what many people thought initially. So I thought he's got the best reign.
Honestly, and don't hurt me for this, but I honestly thought Roman's championship reign was better. His two matches with AJ and that, but you know, that's fair enough. Next one, most improved wrestler of 2016, and this can be performer, wrestler, like all-round package.
Yep, so this was the hardest one out of all of them. I've gone with Alexa Bliss.
Fair enough.
I think she's improved out of sight, and I think that she's a good performer. I know she's not getting a reaction at the moment from the WWE crowds.
It'll come.
We'll discuss it later in the week, as you said, on our on the other podcast with the female roster, but I think she's fantastic heel. She's really good in the ring now, and she's improved a lot.
Honestly, I had beat Alexa Bliss as the most improved wrestler of 2015.
Okay.
If you want to look that up on camelclutchblog.com, plug my article on there. I had Alexa Bliss as the most improved of 2015. Honestly, for 2016, I've gone Becky. So we've both gone with our girls. I've gone with Becky Lynch simply because in 2015, she wasn't herself. She was in her shell. Her promo skills were she was probably a bit nervous. But 2016, you've seen the real Becky Lynch come out, and she's probably the most popular person on SmackDown, aside from AJ. So I feel like she's really worked hard to get herself to that point where she's probably the top female babyface on the roster right now.
And it's a testament to the development in NXT and the women's roster and getting these women to the point where, you know, they're comfortable with themselves and they play their characters really well.
Agreed. Best gimmick of the year. And note, there is a correct answer for this one.
There is? It's Chris Jericho.
Oh, I didn't think about that one. But that is good, but that is the incorrect answer. The obvious answer is Broken Matt Hardy.
Well, that's not WWE.
It doesn't have to be WWE. It's Wrestling Awards.
Well, yeah, Broken Matt Hardy is okay.
Though,
Chris Jericho.
Jericho is pretty great.
He's a catchphrase machine and a funny heel. I don't know what else you want. He's now a senior.
He's not broken brilliant, though.
No, but he's freaking brilliant.
Oh, God, that was bad. Anyway, we'll move on to Tag Team of the Year, them.
Yep, I think this one's obvious. The Revival.
Yep, agreed. Didn't even have to put any thought into it. The Revival being the best tag team by a long way. Now we'll get into the big two. Best female wrestler of 2016. For me, it's Charlotte. I don't think it can be anyone else simply because she's been both the Divas and a 2-time women's champion all this year. She won at WrestleMania, so kayfabe-wise, she's been the number one wrestler. She's performed in everything they've given her. You named her as the best heel. I don't think you can go anyone other than Charlotte.
No, Charlotte was my best female wrestler of the year as well. She's just been great for the whole time.
I think Bayley's the only one who could really challenge her, to be honest. Male wrestler of the year, Dem?
Finn Balor.
Finn Balor, that's interesting.
Yes, I just think he's been champion for a lot of the year in NXT. He's come up to the main roster, and just before he got injured, he got the championship. He's obviously highly rated within the WWE. He performs well consistently. And even though a couple of underwhelming matches with Joe, I still think Balor's been the standout guy.
Absolutely, fair enough. I've gone with AJ simply because he's just delivered in every single thing he's done since he's arrived here. I'm not discounting Roman, though. I feel like people are giving PWA a lot of slack for having Roman at number one. I think Roman's had a fantastic year. He's delivered in almost every big match he's been in. He's done everything the company's asked for, aside from getting suspended. I think you can't really argue with Roman from our answers. Yeah,
I think that's fine that they've put Roman. I'm happy with them having Roman ahead of Balor and AJ and Jay Lethal from
Agreed. Ring of Honor. So now we'll be getting into our four issues for the week. I've changed mine a few times, so I haven't got as much prepared as I would like. But we're going to start with yours, and you're wanting to talk about Gallows and Anderson, who I had as the biggest disappointment of 2016.
Yeah, so I wouldn't call them biggest disappointment. I guess depends what your point of view is. But Gallows and Anderson, when they recently put the Dudleys, they ruined their retirement by putting them through a table, doing the magic killer on the outside. That's the Gallows and Anderson we want to see. And there's nothing wrong with them being a little bit funny at times and, you know, having that character depth. But Gallows and Anderson are the most dominant and probably the best tag team in the world. They showed that in New Japan. And, I mean, Anderson's fantastic worker. Anderson is fantastic on the mic. Like, I'm a really huge fan of his. And Gallows is great as well. I just think that the way WWE have booked them, especially recently with the Old Day, could be the worst segment I've ever seen in my life.
Top three.
I know, it wasn't as bad as Titus O'Neil's promo last week.
That whole last hour of Raw.
Yeah, but that was just that's not what Gallows and Anderson should be. They shouldn't be making fart jokes, old jokes. They're a dominant team. You can have New Day doing good comedy stuff and have Gallows and Anderson being the tough guys, and that feud would still work really well. And I think Gallows and Anderson are going to win the titles in the Clash of Champions. And I think Gallows and Anderson will hold the titles for a while. And I think they'll bring in, hopefully sooner rather than later, Kenny Omega. Hopefully he comes in. I reckon the Bullet Club's going to build up in the WWE, and Gallows and Anderson will be at the forefront of that. But at the moment, it's a big issue.
The WWE are going to have to pretend that the last 2 months haven't happened for that to work properly, because Gallows and Anderson have been used as comedic, like with the whole Big East testicle thing and the doctors thing. It just hasn't been funny. It's been cringeworthy. And I think the New Day as well, I don't think they're blameless here. I think they've had a really poor 2016. I think if you go back to the start of the year, they had a good feud with the Usos and Kalisto coming out of TLC. And then they went straight into that stuff with the League of Nations. And then after that was like the Vaudevillains and the stuff that went on from there. And it just wasn't very good. I don't think they've had a really good stretch of time at all this year. The Wyatt's stuff wasn't good either. I feel like they've almost bombed it this year, to be honest.
They need a heel turn. The face turn hasn't really worked that well. They need a heel turn. They need to go against Enzo and Cass. And we need to see the Gallows and Anderson. They need to be rebuilt. But I think if you put the titles on them and then really beating down on the New Day at Clash of Champions, if you do that, I reckon that almost, it doesn't eradicate what's happened, but it starts them again. It resets them, and they can be the best tag team in the WWE.
They just need to reset Gallows and Anderson and let them wrestle. Let them do what they do so well, which is just put on great tag team matches. And the New Day can do it too. They just need to be given the chance.
There's nothing better than a Carl Anderson spine buster.
Oh, yeah. I love a good spine buster, and he's up there. Okay, so now we're going to get into my first issue of the week, and that is, should Raw go back to 2 hours? I think the answer to that is obviously yes, but we've got to figure out how that happens and if it can happen. The biggest issue is sponsorship. Raw makes a lot of money off their third hour of sponsorship, and they would be very hard-pressed to give that up. They probably wouldn't make any money reducing it to 2 hours. In fact, it would help the product, but they would probably lose money doing it. The other negative issue would be the amount of depth that they have in Raw, especially with the Cruiserweights coming in. Would 2 hours be enough time to go over this entire Raw roster? I think you can, but it needs to be worked differently. If they were going to reduce it to 2 hours, they had to do it at the brand split. It's probably too late now, and we're just going to have to deal with these. Because let's look at Raw from this week. You had a really good match between Seth Rollins and Chris Jericho. And then between there and the main event, which was Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, everything in between was terrible. You had an hour and a half of terrible programming, with the exception of Sasha's promo, which was a good promo, but a terrible angle.
Yeah.
Everything else, you know, you had Titus, you had squash matches, you had Gallows and Anderson with their old day thing. It was just an hour of bad programming. You kind of have a full hour of undercard stuff that doesn't deliver. And this is exactly what we said last week when we were saying Raw was better than SmackDown last week because of its main event. The rest of it was average.
Yeah.
SmackDown is consistently putting out a good show. From start to finish, you watch it, and there's very few things you would want to fast forward. Raw, I watched it on replay this week. I fast forwarded through probably about 90 to 120 minutes of it. It's just not delivering at all at the 3 hour length, and something has to be done, and the thing that's being done is the Cruiserweight division. But I don't know if that's enough. I think you've got 3 hours of programming, adding 10 Cruiserweights. You can really only have one feud with the Cruiserweight title, and you've got to introduce all these new guys. But I don't think you can have what they have right now and succeed, especially with the women's division being so thin.
It needed to be 2 hours, as you said, back at the split, because it is too late now.
Yeah.
2 hours would fit it perfectly in terms of we'd get quality programming the whole time, but it's too late. There's too many people on the roster, and cutting it down to 2 hours now would have a detrimental effect on superstars. Ultimately, it's a financially driven business.
Yeah.
And as much as we like the entertainment, as much as we talk about it, you know, everyone talks about it on Twitter, everyone talks about it on Facebook, everyone loves it, analyzes it. Ultimately, it's a business. And the 3 hours fills their pockets. It makes up for the fact that WWE Network is still losing money. And it makes up for the fact that they can build these other services at a loss initially, and then it will benefit them in the future. I just think they have to keep building the depth, and they will keep building the depth. They're not going to stop with the Cruiserweight division. They're going to keep signing other people, and I guess in doing that, it probably makes the 3 hours more bearable. The Cruiserweight division will mean it's not 90 minutes that's rubbish. it's 60 minutes or it's 45 minutes, and they'll slowly get that going. The 2 hours of SmackDown is really good, but there aren't that many people on there. Like, as in, they're fulfilling the requirements that the superstars need on SmackDown, whereas on Raw, cutting it to 2 hours just doesn't work. I agree that it's an issue. The length of the program is an issue, but ultimately, there's nothing they can do now except for building the depth even more.
I think WWE have booked themselves into a corner with the success of NXT. It was never supposed to be this successful as a brand. And what's happened now is NXT has become the home of all the best indie wrestling in the world. And what it means is NXT has a lot of superstars in it all the time. When you call Shinsuke Nakamura and Samoa Joe up to the main roster, you'll probably see more high-profile names. Maybe you'll see a Ricochet or a Jay Lethal come into NXT. But what that means is you've got too many people on your roster. You've got more wrestlers than you know what to do with, because you can't keep them in NXT forever. Eventually, they have to come up. And soon, you're going to have rosters with just simply too many people. And at the same time, you're going to have too many people, but you're not going to be able to fill 3 hours because it's going to be the same formula of show. You can't have Samoa Joe come up and then be him doing squash matches and him going into a mid-card feud, because that's not where Samoa Joe deserves to be.
No.
But there's no other spot for him right now, so he has to stay in NXT. But what it means is we're getting Titus O'Neil versus Darren Young. So the problem is the WWE have put themselves into this corner where they have too many wrestlers and they can't do anything with them. And that's leading to guys like, as we discussed last week with the NXT issues, they've got guys like Joe and Balor who are in NXT for too long. They come up to the main roster, they get injured because their bodies are exhausted. So it's an issue, it's a long-term issue, and that's the kind of thing we like to focus on this podcast. So we'll see what happens, because Raw is going to struggle at 3 hours. SmackDown is absolutely destroying it.
Yeah, absolutely. And NXT is the best product WWE has to offer at the moment. So my second issue is about the legends of the WWE and how they're being used. We saw Mark Henry get a one-off match against Rusev for the title, which was just a squash match, really. Rusev just got to win pretty comfortably. Kane has had the last 2 weeks. What was it, the Milkman last week? And then Fandango's dancing lessons this week. Fandango without Tyler Breeze there. I mean, I want to see Fandango and Tyler Breeze pushed, but that was just a rubbish segment. That was the worst segment on SmackDown this week. Kane, it was a highlight seeing Kane do a little dance himself, a little Fandango finger pointing, but they need to give these guys one final feud where they put someone else over and then that's it. Kane is a legend. Kane is, like, I love Kane, but you need him to go against maybe Baron Corbin. And then let Baron Corbin, let his profile be boosted by winning a feud against Kane. Mark Henry, you need him to, you know, it's that sort of thing that needs to happen. You don't need them just little filler segments for 3 minutes where, hey, look, it's Kane. I forgot he was at the WWE. Oh, it's a comedy angle, or it's, you know, where he's choke-slamming people for no reason. I just think that they deserve more respect, and WWE isn't really showing them respect because they don't have anything to do with them.
Yeah, agreed. And I think I was actually genuinely surprised in that Kane segment that Baron Corbin didn't come out. I was waiting for him to come out, attack Kane from behind. I thought that was the whole point of the segment, but the segment ended up having no purpose.
Set up a Baron Corbin Fandango.
Baron Corbin Kane match, preferably.
No? Well, tag team, Baron Corbin Fandango.
Because the Backlash card has 6 matches right now, and I always just assumed that the 7th match was going to be either Corbin Kane or Corbin Cruz with Kalisto injured. So I honestly thought that's what they were going to do. I think that Corbin Kane feud is inevitable. Kane will put him over, as you said. I think Big Show is probably another one of those legends that...
Yeah, but it's Big Show versus Shaq, so...
Yeah, but
he's putting Shaquille O'Neal over.
He'll have one feud in between then, and it'll be Strowman, obviously, and he'll put Strowman over.
Yes.
Henry, I don't know. Can Henry still go? I think that's the question. Has he... Because his match with Rusev was really slow.
Yeah, I don't... He just needs something, though, you know. These are guys that have been with the company for over a decade, well over a decade, and... There's something they can do with Mark. Even if they put him in a tag team or something where he comes in like Rhino is. Rhino isn't wrestling a lot. Heath Slater's doing a lot of the work, and then Rhino comes in, Gore, 1, 2, 3. Maybe he can put someone over like that. Who knows? But they need to do something with them.
Maybe have Joe retire Henry. Have him actually retire. Like, make Henry's final match. Maybe have Henry versus, I don't know, some mid-card heel. Henry wins. Everyone's happy. He's like, yes, I won my retirement match. Out comes Joe. Locks in that Coquina clutch and just, like, Henry has to be carried out on a stretcher.
And then when we're sitting here next year with our awards, we'll have Samoa Joe as the best heel.
Exactly. And Henry can do it in a pink suit or whatever. Yeah, he's already done the retirement speech, so he doesn't need to do that again. So, yeah, I think that's a good point. My second issue is SmackDown's depth issues. And we've already talked about how the roster doesn't have a lot of depth. but the WWE has too many competitors, full stop, which is, again, is a weird issue to have. But the issue has been created because of the draft and the draft rules. It was really weird that Raw got 3 picks for every 2 SmackDown picks. That made sense in the first 2 or 3 rounds, so you can get a few extra people on Raw, because Raw is longer and Raw needs people to fill time. That's fair enough. But when you're getting into round 7 and 8, it means that SmackDown has 8 or 9 less wrestlers than Raw. And if you look at the SmackDown mid-card, what is the SmackDown mid-card? It's Baron Corbin, Apollo Crews, Kalisto, The Miz, Dolph Ziggler. Is that it? I think that's it.
It's 5 people.
Maybe Kane. So that's legitimately it. 6 wrestlers.
Milkman?
Milkman, 6.5. Kane's probably part-time. The Miz is the IC champion. And then you've got Ziggler, Corbin, Cruz, Kalisto. Kalisto's injured. So you have 3. Because on top of that, Shelton Benjamin's not returning anytime soon. I just saw on Twitter, he literally just had surgery. You've got Del Rio, who's left the company, good riddance. But at the same time, the mid-card, there is nobody there. You saw...
They're going to push Kurt Hawkins, aren't they?
I hope not. Who cares? Like, he, I hope they use him in a Jinder Mahal-style role.
Why would you come back for that anyway?
Ask Jinder. He did the same thing. Slater will go into that mid-card, and hopefully they'll use him well. Eventually, Rhino's there as well. But there just isn't any depth. And you look at guys like Sami Zayn, who's being used to put over Rollins and then put over Owens, and he's not in any feud right now. You look at Cesaro and Sheamus, who are doing a good thing with that best of seven, and Raw certainly needs the time for them to be filling that. But you look at guys like even someone like Jack Swagger, who nobody cares about and nobody will ever care about again. He should be on SmackDown, so he at least can put over Corbin. He can put over The Miz, so you don't have to have Cruz dropping to Miz.
Exactly.
Like, I feel like that's where SmackDown needs an undercard. You have guys, like, the entire Cruiserweight division it's going to be 11 people. And you don't need 11 Cruiserweights in a division that already has Neville and Sin Cara. There's no reason to have Noam Dar, the Brian Kendrick, guys like that on Raw, when they could be feeling important depth on SmackDown. You just have to look at Main Event, which is filmed before SmackDown and is supposed to be SmackDown roster guys. Jinder Mahal versus Jack Swagger was a match on this week's Main Event because SmackDown didn't have anybody else. I think they did a singles match between 2 tag team wrestlers before that as well. So there's no singles depth. And SmackDown right now is producing a brilliant product. No complaints about that there. But eventually it's going to catch up to it.
It is. And I know you said Austin Aries should go to Raw last week. Someone like Austin Aries should go up to SmackDown. Ty Dillinger, those guys can be mid-card as easily. Then you have Jack Gallagher and Akira Tozawa. If they're going to join, I know the Cruiserweight division and all that, but they'd be perfect for SmackDown. Imagine them having matches.
And you got Brian Kendrick, who has a natural tie to Daniel Bryan.
Exactly.
It just makes sense for him to go to SmackDown. And you can build the Cruiserweight division without the Brian Kendrick.
You can have a Cruiserweight division that's a floating title between 2 brands, and that way it gives depth to SmackDown, and Raw doesn't need the 11 people, 12 people, as you said, because they're going to keep signing people. So you could have that happen. You could have a floating title, which would, I reckon that would excite people, because they wouldn't know where the Cruiserweight title is going to come up next. They could have, you know, the SmackDown couple of mid-carders fight versus the Raw mid-carders, and then it's the number one contenders match. There's options to do it, whereas now, you're right, SmackDown doesn't have the depth to, in 2 months, SmackDown's just going to have the same people on every show over and over again, and the crowds will get restless.
And the same will happen with the women's division, unfortunately, too.
Yeah, exactly, and you don't want that. They need to keep signing people and put them on SmackDown. They need to put up Austin Aries to SmackDown.
Yep.
They need to put up Hideo Itami when he's ready to SmackDown.
And then that's what I was saying earlier with the issue with them booking themselves into a corner with NXT. They can't do that because NXT is a touring party now and it needs to sell tickets. Like, I'm going to the NXT Tour of Australia when they come here in December. And I was saying earlier, like, I want to see Austin Aries, I want to see Ty Dillinger, I want to see Nakamura and these guys. But at the same time, I want them on the main roster. And, like, I'm still going to go if they don't have them on the tour. But at the same time, they need these guys on SmackDown, and they need these guys on Raw to fill Raw's awful third hour and to fill SmackDown's depth. And yet the problem here is they need these guys in NXT to sell tickets, because that's what NXT is now. It's a touring brand. It's not a developmental brand anymore.
Yep, and again, it's a business. They want the profits. I know you're going to NXT in particular to see Steve Cutler.
One of
your favorites.
Main evented NXT tonight against Shinsuke Nakamura. My favorite thing about that was Cutler going, oh, this Nakamura guy, he hasn't made sacrifices like I have. He's wrestled in Japan. Yeah, I've been here for 4 years. I've made all the sacrifices. Like, dude, you're talking to Shinsuke Nakamura, who's, like, wrestled for, 15 years.
Yes.
You're saying he hasn't made any sacrifices? Just, like, stop, please.
Yeah, That's, yeah, I don't like what you just said at the end there. It's please. But anyway, yeah, I just think that NXT is now a business. So I know it's unlikely to see Aries in SmackDown and all that, unless they bring in Jay Lethal and Adam Cole and all those guys.
And then again, they're going to have too many people total. Like, you can't have that many people on your roster.
It's a real delicate position.
Okay, so we're going to wrap it up there, but before we do, the CWC, the Cruiserweight Classic, which has provided some amazing wrestling, I don't want it to end. We're down to the final four. I just want to get quick predictions out of you. The first match is TJ Perkins taking on Kota Ibushi.
Kota Ibushi, I think he will win. TJ Perkins didn't get the best reaction, no. You were saying, against Rich Swann. He's a heel, though. He's naturally a cocky heel, is the sort of guy I'd say TJP is.
Yeah, but he wrestled it as a babyface.
Yeah, no, I know, but he could be the heel against Kota Ibushi. I think everyone said at the start of the tournament it was going to be Zack Sabre Jr. against Kota Ibushi, so I'd say we have to keep going with that.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think it'll be Sabre Jr. beating Grand Metalik. I don't think there's any other option.
Even though those two, Metalik and TJP, are signed with WWE and the other two are not.
Yeah, that logic I don't get. I don't get why you have two guys who aren't signed winning the tournament and the guys who are signed to you not in the final. Because they knew Sabre and Ibushi weren't going to sign well before the tournament started. So they should have had Ibushi and Sabre on the same side of the bracket. So you can have one in the finals and then you can have a TJP or a Grand Metalik or, you know, Gallagher, Cedric Alexander, someone who's actually been signed in the final alongside them. I think having an Ibushi Sabre Jr. final would be underwhelming. Simply, not because of the match, but simply because neither of them have signed with WWE.
Which is why they might pull a swerve. They could have TJP beating Ibushi. I don't think they'll have Zack Sabre Jr. losing, even though I think he should be the one that's losing.
Yeah, I can't see Ibushi losing either, though. I think they're just going to go with the Sabre, because they've already done the swerve with Gargano losing to TJP.
Yeah.
TJP,
No.
What do you think of him? Like, he's beaten Swan, he's beaten Gargano, two guys who most of the crowd probably didn't want him to beat. Do you think he's worth being rated that high?
I think he's very good. I think he is. He was in TNA for a bit. He's worked really hard. He's really good in the ring, and I think that's the important part. I mean, Swan's entertaining, Gargano, you know, they're all really good wrestlers, but I think it's a push. It's a good initial push for TJP, because I think Rich Swan and Johnny Gargano would be popular anyway, whereas I don't think TJP would. So getting this, even if he's a heel in WWE or whatever, I think it's important for him to get that initial push.
Okay, and we're going to wrap it up there for this week's Glorious Wrestling Podcast, Episode 3. Before we finish, remember we're going to be putting out our full women's roster analysis, rankings, and where they are now, where they were a year ago, where they'll be in a year's time. Full analysis, Raw, SmackDown, the entire brand. We're going to go through each woman individually, give them the time they deserve. So stay tuned for that later in the week.
No, thanks, Nick.
Okay, now you can enjoy your sushi. But before you leave, give me your Twitter so we can plug your damn Twitter.
@demp_9, @demp_9.
And follow him if you want some real, real weird tweets. Anyway, follow me @NickNegroPontus. And follow the channel. And most importantly, don't follow us. Just follow the channel @GloriousWP. And follow Big E on Twitter @WWEBigE.
But don't follow him.
That's a great up, up, down, down reference. So we're going to leave it there for this episode of the Glorious Wrestling Podcast. See you in a few days for episode 4.
Thank you.